The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you proudly and supported proudly by Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours right now at bigbarker.com/Ricky. And Kinetic Skateboarding. Get 9.1% off your first order at kineticskateboarding.com with promo code Dave Silver. You can actually do that in store too if it's your first purchase. Just say Dave Silver to whoever's working. On the show today, we will talk about Sixers Jazz, the Ben Simmons fight that erupted on the internet all throughout the week, little Lorenzo Brown mailbag, that little touching email from Lorenzo Brown mailbag, the return of the Jorge Gutierrez recommendation corner, and Andrew Unterberger will join us for about 35 seconds before his internet screws up and he has to leave. But the plan is for him to revisit our bold predictions, and we'll talk about some Sixers-related New Year's resolutions. Before we get going, also Fly the Process 4 on sale now for you to reserve. You can use some of that Christmas cash your grandma gave you. You only need $150 of that Christmas cash to reserve your spot. 4-day trip to Minnesota where we will all sit and cheer for Covington and Dario at the game. The price for it includes your airfare, 4 days of hotel, I think, is it 3 nights of hotel, however many nights it is, breakfast every day, free happy hour every day, pregame party, t-shirt, picture on the court, and memories that will last a lifetime. Just go to rightsrickysanchez.com to reserve your spot. Without any further ado, here is Run the Jewels.
We are the murderers there. That went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Jew runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who did not read all of the reviews on a podcast yesterday. That is Mike Levin. Hey,
no,
Mike.
Never will.
Never
I
will.
I object to it in theory, in practice, across the board.
There were many of the reviews defending your right to not have to listen to the reviews, people telling me to stop it. Also, one person saying that I was slacking in my intros of you and things to say about you in the intro. All sorts of complaints in the reviews. I love it. So thanks, everyone. You know, along with the Celtics loss, we had a Utah win this week that was sort of an underratedly good win considering the Celtics loss on the road. It, you know, these 10:30 games East Coast sort of don't have the impact that the normal, at least on the East Coast, that the normal games do. But it was, a good win to be so convincing.
Yeah, good road win. Sixers obviously been good at home and struggled on the road. This is they're 23-13, which is very good. I believe they have the same record as the Warriors. The problem is they just haven't. I think everyone's still just waiting for that like statement win, that win against one of the five or six best teams in the league that you can be like, okay, we got it. Here's how we can compete against these teams, because they haven't. I mean, even the Toronto win was without Kawhi, so that would help. But you know, they're a very good team, and they generally beat up on the worst teams or mediocre teams, so. I don't know. Maybe we're too down on them. 23-13 is very good, and their defense, their offense and defensive rating have gone up in the like both above average area.
Yeah, I think one thing that happens is when you're only really concentrating on one team, you have, and we'll get into this when we talk about the Simmons thing. You just sort of have a tendency to run out of just like you pick apart everything because you see it more. Like a disappointing loss for the Sixers. The Sixers lose to the Nets has a different effect on us than if the Raptors lose to the Nets, right? Because if the Raptors lose to the Nets, we don't think about it at all. It's just one of their losses. If the Sixers lose to the Nets and we all watch it, it becomes a bigger deal. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing in that, like, we see everything, and I think we, as in a collective, know everything that you know, every road bump that could be coming along. But the negative is that it's tough to have perspective, and that doesn't mean that every loss shouldn't be, you know, a bad loss isn't a bad loss. It is still, but I think the perspective is lost, and I think also the just sort of the grand nature of where the team has come from, where they are now, what the expectation was, and the Butler trade itself, I think, puts everything in a different light. So there's a lot of things going on at once, right? But they 23-13 is a good record. It's the same record as the Warriors, who everybody thinks are falling apart.
But that's
a different issue. The Jazz game itself, it's on brand for us to talk about, for me to bring this up first. So Bolden has looked good on defense a couple of times, right? What are you laughing about?
Great, no, go right to Bolden. I've had this thing on my notes that I haven't said yet, which is Bolden shoots the hardest ball in the league. So finally I get to say that.
So here's the thing: is that I don't want to belabor their thin thing. Obviously they're thin. Okay, they don't have enough players, and that's why they have to do this. But Bolden is clearly a much better perspective backup center, I think, than four next to Embiid, because I never believe his shot is going in ever. And he is, to my eye, an out-of-control, disastrous offensive player. But if you were to only have him in dunker situations or screen and roll situations, and he is a much better rim protector than I would have ever imagined.
Yeah,
I do think that is his best role, as opposed to the four role, which they had him playing a lot in the Utah game with Embiid.
Yeah, I would sort of protect him a little bit with giving him, like, he plays the five with Simmons and Chandler out there, so it's just him as the guy that can get rebounds and protect the rim, but yeah, I would agree. I think he's he's clearly the most athletic guy on the bench, and when you bring in those guys, they're just not capable of hanging defensively. Jonah can at least, I don't know if he's the smartest defensive player, but he can at least not get exposed like one on one really. So I would, I think you can just play him almost like you played Rashawn, which is, you know, you don't love the minutes out there, but he brings energy. He's a really good offensive rebounder. And maybe someday that jumper comes along, but again, hardest ball in the league that hits the rim. The rim like needs to be checked on after he shoots. but the team seems to like him, and I would definitely be fine with him becoming that, you know, once in a while backup five if Muscala's not on and Amir is still slow.
I thought it was an Embiid game that, so there's a difference between him like sleepwalking through a game, but that, or just sort of casually being awesome during a game. I thought this was the latter.
Yeah.
He didn't force too much as the game went on. It definitely, the score reflects it, but the Sixers got better as the game went on, and he got better as the game went on. I thought Simmons got better as the game went on, but Embiid, when he is in the flow of everything, like a casual 23-15, six assists and four blocks, and he didn't even stand out like in a standout way, just that he was casually awesome. I thought this was one of those Embiid games.
Yeah, no, he played well. And he has such tough finishes against when he, whether it's through double teams or through like obviously a really good defender in Gobert, some really impossible finishes. His like spatial awareness on the court when he's around the rim, he like flips it over his head. It's the combination of strength and athleticism and touch when he's inside there is really impressive. But yeah, I was impressed. I think the first game he's had over five blocks of the season, and it was it mattered because he a couple were chased down, a couple were like blowing up. I don't think like so much of the Jazz offense, because they don't have a good offense, is, you know, Gobert pick and rolls and just having him be a rim runner. And Embiid did a really good job of preventing that for the most part. And that was, you know, he's obviously a very good defensive player, but I think he maybe stepped it up a little because he wants to win Defensive Player of the Year, and he's playing against the guy who's probably going to win it, or prospective win it.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. And he, even in the fourth, when the Jazz were making just sort of like a little mini run, there was a block in there that was, I thought, like really helpful in, you know, there's two ways you can help end runs like that. One is getting a bucket, and the other one is preventing a bucket. And he had one in there that felt like it was important. I thought it was a really good TJ game too. There were a couple of really good assists to Bolden. He always walks this line between, like, he's particularly aggressive on both sides, you know, offensively and defensively. Like, he's borderline out of control sometimes. But there is a difference in him, like, when he's just below out of control and just above, like, aggressive, where he is, like, the TJ sweet spot, where he seems to get that 16-footer and it goes in, or he seems to find open guys. And I thought he was particularly good in this game.
Yeah, I mean, the shot was going in, so he was getting to his spots and hitting those shots a couple times over, you know, big defenders contesting. My thing with TJ is he just needs, when he doesn't have the ball offensively, he's just standing in the corner. And I love his energy defensively. He seems to be one of the few guys that like gets loose balls. JJ Redick has never gotten a loose ball in his life. But with TJ in there, he becomes useless if he's not doing something. I wonder if there's some better way to use him, whether it's him cutting or something. If he's out there for 23, 25 minutes a night, they're not letting him operate for all those times. A lot of it's like he dribbles up the court and then hands the ball to whether it's Embiid, Butler, or Simmons and gets out of the way. And he's just not a threat from out there. They're just not covering him. And his release is so slow that even when, you know, Embiid finds him from the post, he, you know, if the pass isn't perfect, then, you know, TJ will do that, like, he'll pump fake, or he wants a drive. He doesn't want, if the defender's contesting on him, he's not like, I got to get the shot off quickly. He's just waiting so he can go past him. And he's just, the release has to get faster. He has to get more confident or something. It's just tough to play him because offensively he just stands there a lot of the time.
Well, that puts him on the list with about half of the roster.
I know, so. I know, so I know. But it was good. It was good Utah game for him, and when he's hitting, it makes it easier.
Redick, so I have this, you know, Redick is, I think he's only shooting 36% from three or something, and has not been quite as good as we're used to him being. My thought with that is that shit always evens out, and my guess would be, We probably have a stretch. I mean, this was a good Redick game. Obviously, the shots were going down. Made a couple of nice passes, I thought, too. But I'm guessing we're going to have a 10 or 15 game stretch where there are a lot of 5-for-9s in there. That would, yeah, I hope. And I hope that the shooting isn't a whole season outlier or a he got a year older thing. But my guess would be we're going to have a stretch of Redick at some point where he's hitting everything, and maybe this was the start of it, because it was a good Redick game.
Yeah, he's actually making the same amount of threes as he's made the last 2 years or the last couple years, 2.8 per game, but he's shooting a full three per game more than he shot last year, and which is the most he shot in his career at 7.6 attempts per game in largely the same amount of minutes. So I wonder if he's just, you know, not tired out, but like, if the shot, he's having to take tougher looks, even though he makes those a lot of the time, the tougher looks are dragging him down because he's not used to that much volume. But
yeah,
I tend to agree with you, and it'll even out.
There is a point at which, you know, volume and efficiency don't, like, the efficiency of something won't go up as the volume goes up. And I mean, I was somebody posted it the other day. I mean, if you combine his open and wide open threes this year, it accounts for 71% of his threes. So I don't know how that compares to previously, but it seems like enough. But yeah, my guess would he to my eye, he is shooting like everything looks fine. He looks worse on defense, but he doesn't look. If you didn't have, I feel like the Simmons, talking about Simmons in this game, we'll transition nice into the Simmons discussion, but it was a good Simmons game in which he also got better as the game went on. I did sort of notice that it did seem like, and I'm gonna start watching this more, but when everybody thinks of like the mismatches with Simmons when it's like a point guard who has to guard him, but it does seem like the mismatch is almost better when it's a four who has to guard him, like when it's Favors or something like that, because they are not quick enough to handle him. And it did look again to my eye as watching this, as when those guys were on him, he had more success in the half court.
Maybe, yeah. I think it's time to time. He likes posting those guys up when they're little guys. Favors gave him some trouble at the beginning of the game, causing some like errant shots, and Simmons had to like adjust and use his quickness rather than. Favors did a good job of kind of just staying home on if he's getting like Simmons just running at you like a bull. So Favors kind of just got a hand up and adjusted the shot without fouling. But yeah, I think he. That's the benefit, is he can tailor his game to you know, whoever's on him. And I think I was impressed that he did a good job on with like Jay Crowder when he was on him, typically like a strong defender that is tough to get by. I did like the physicality. There was a couple times when Mitchell switched on him, and there was definitely some pushing and shoving. There's like definite real. I don't know if it's from Simmons' end, but Donovan Mitchell definitely does not like Ben Simmons, and that is. Fun to watch.
Well, Donovan Mitchell's future as sixth man extraordinaire looks to be off to a rousing start. I hope he'll hate Ben Simmons as the starting lineups are announced and he's watching from the bench in 2 years.
There you go. Good Ben Simmons. I think Ben and Jimmy are both active defensively. Jimmy does this. I just love it when he does it. Just like cheats off ball on defense, and I think two times in the fourth quarter where he got just like poke it out of your hand steals and just like easy coasting layups. I really like Jimmy, man. I know he's not, he still hasn't like locked in his potential on this team. I think they're still figuring out a way to make it work. But I just really love watching him play, and I really love that he's here, and I would like to delete anything I said prior to acquiring him. That I was worried about anything. I mean, just the Tibbsy and stuff I was worried about. Now that he's the best teammate of all time, that's no concern of mine at all. He's just really, really good and does everything you want him to do.
I have all of the same concerns about the Tibbsy and stuff. He has been good, but my eye sees a less explosive Jimmy Butler than I saw a couple years ago. And my hope is that this is him surveying the situation, but I do, you know, when you think about that 5-year 190 deal, like it does worry me a little bit. The Tibbsy and stuff, but we'll see. I mean, there's no way to tell any of that stuff. I think the home stretch and the playoffs will be a good signal to us about where he is physically, you know, if he turns it up a notch. And but he has done a good job of fitting himself in, and it does seem like he doesn't get quite as much space on offense in ISOs and pick and rolls as you would hope, but I don't know, maybe I don't know what that is. I just, you know, the pessimist in me is like, maybe he's on the other side of his prime, and so I don't know, we'll see.
I think he's saving it a little bit. And he knows that he doesn't need to. There were a couple possessions. I was actually getting frustrated when the game was still close. They just weren't going to him for like 6 or 7 straight possessions. He didn't touch the ball on offense. And that's obviously a problem. But yeah, I would like to, this will transition into the Simmons thing when we're ready to talk about it. But would definitely like to see more Jimmy pick and roll with anybody. Embiid, Simmons, Muscala, anyone.
Before we get to that, let's talk about our sponsor, Kornblau & Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. Of course, the premier boutique personal injury law firm in the Delaware Valley, the only one that sponsors corn dogs and VIP sections of live podcasts. We got you got some good Kornblau fan email this week. I'd like to read that. A Kornblau review. Hey man, I know you don't normally read reviews for Kornblau or LL, but I tried to send a DM to Spike into the pod account, but both had their DMs closed. I was hoping this could get read on the pod because I was hoping to encourage people to reach out to Kornblau. I recently had someone total my car in an accident who was uninsured, and one of the first calls I made to my parents and to my insurance was to Kornblau. He walked me through everything, including what to get from my insurance to see what case I could have. When I sent him all the info, he reached back out 30 minutes later at around 6:30 on a Friday night, no less, to talk about further steps. While we determined no further action would be needed, he still reached out in the next week to make sure I was doing well and to see how the car was doing. I can't recommend him enough. And while I'm glad I didn't have to go to court, he would have represented me well. Thanks for plugging him. He assured me that, yes, he knows Lickface before we got into the details of the accident. Hopefully you guys can work with him for a while. Thanks for the suggestion. It was great. And dude, if the other person doesn't have insurance, that doesn't always mean there's no case. That's what uninsured motorist coverage is for. If you think you have a case, do what he did. Reach out to Kornblau. Give him a call or shoot him an email. You will always get a Kornblau. It doesn't cost you anything. 215-576-7200. Ask for Adam or email Kornblau at kornblauandkornblau.com. Kornblau spelled with a K. The rest
is up to you.
Oh, there you go. Adam Kornblau, official lawyer of The Process. I had recommendation corner here, but do you want to go right into Simmons and skip recommendation corner? Or do you want the little break of recommendation corner?
Let's take a break. Let's breeze in. It's the New Year's, the holidays. Everybody else is taking pod breaks. We're doing it. We may as well take a fucking break while we're at it.
I emailed Mike earlier in the week, and I was like, you know, now that we talk about basketball most of the time, we should reintroduce some of our other segments we had just to sort of break up the monotony.
We talk about basketball a lot these days. It's a lot. We need like a controversy or something. I was talking about like drop pick and roll coverage last week. I didn't even know what I was saying.
Yeah, we're making that up. So at least we can be honest about it. Until the Sixers do something weird again, we're going to do. So one of the segments we had started about a year ago was Jorge Gutierrez Recommendation Corner, where we recommend something outside of basketball to you.
And why was it Jorge Gutierrez? Because it was
I don't know.
His agent like recommended. I think it was like his agent recommended that they were gonna like keep the Sixers were gonna keep him in the trade, and then they didn't. Might have been that.
I don't know. You were the one that came up with the names for all of them. That's so fair. My recommendation is music. I did a podcast that will not be named on for best music of the year with Jason Lipschitz, and right before it I ended up listening Steve Hyden, music writer, does a podcast called Celebration Rock, and he did his year-end one with Ian Cohen, and they both had very high on their list an album from a band called Wild Pink, who's from New York, and the name of the album is The Yoke and the Fur. And within one day it became the best thing I listened to all year by far. It is an incredible album. So I described it as late era Brand New meets Tom Petty, in that like it does have some sort of alt emo tinge to it somewhere, but it is a very big sounding, I don't know, like heartland rock kind of sound. My buddy Jared described it as Wilco with Ryan Adams vocals. It, like, beginning to end, it's an incredible album. I've recommended it on Twitter a bunch of times, but I can't recommend it enough. Wild Pink, The Yoke in the Fur. Do you have anything?
Cool. We're in the like movie season. So since I'm in the Writers Guild, I get like a ton of screeners. So I've just been pounding through movies like two or three a day. It's pretty fun. I'll give you a couple. Still I got to see. Some I got to see. Eighth Grade so far is my favorite movie of the year. It was really good. Very like personal and touching and funny in specific ways. I also really like Star Is Born. I enjoyed it. I've been singing the soundtrack. Can't stop.
We'll never see that movie.
I also, it's really actually well directed. It's not just, I went in expecting to hate it, like legitimately, and right. I really enjoyed it. Black Panther was actually very good. And then I would say so far the other top few on my list are First Man, which I really liked, and Cold War, which is a Polish film, is the same director as the guy who directed Ida a couple years ago, which won, I think it won the Best Foreign Film Oscar. And then Mary, Queen of Scots, I saw yesterday with Saoirse Ronan and Margot Robbie, and was a period drama, but a different, like a cool, like new take on it, which I liked. So yeah, see movies.
Cool.
Go see independent movies. I try to go to independent cinemas because you want them around. And someday I'll have shit in there, so I'm going to ask you to do it when I have movies out there. So start doing it now.
My friend Tommy produced and directed an independent movie this year, a documentary about all those people that have stories about Bill Murray, like showing up at their kickball game or at their house or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called The Bill Murray Stories, and he talks to all of them. And it is the perfect length. I think it's 80 minutes, which I love, but I thought it was really good. And he basically chases Bill Murray the entire movie and finally gets to him at the end. I won't say what happens, but
that's cool.
Yeah, I want to support Tommy as well. All right, Ben Simmons thing. So after the Celtics game, there was it's what started as normal, the normal Ben Simmons stuff, which is the him at the end of games against Boston sort of stuff, evolved into what I would like to recommend is that the two extreme sides of this take, I recommend you would ignore them. Though they have every right to do what they would want to do. It's pretty obvious the Sixers need to trade Ben Simmons now side, that the article on Yahoo or the Deadspin guy, I would recommend ignoring those people because those are not most people. And then the other side, who is trolling you, by the way, is like Ben Dietrich, who is, by way of pretending to be a Sixers fan, trolling Sixers fans by suggesting that the fact that Ben Simmons doesn't shoot any jumpers at all is a made-up problem that no one actually thinks is a problem, and that the fans are going to drive him out of town, and suggesting that anyone suggesting it's a problem is trying to drive him out of town and trade him. He's doing a bit. He loves to start arguments online, and that's what he's doing. So I would recommend you ignore both of those people, even though I respect both of their opinions.
I would disagree on the trade him one, because there's a lot of people saying it versus pretty much just Ben saying it's not a problem at all.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's just Ben. Maybe I'm just talking about fans that are doing it. I think when we talk about the reality of, like, what I'd like to do and what I think we can do on the pod, and this is one of the benefits of having a podcast that's just about the Sixers, is we can talk about the reality of it, right? Which is definitely in between. I don't think the Sixers are considering trading Ben Simmons right now. I also don't think they are thinking, boy, the fact that he doesn't shoot is no issue at all. It is possible when someone says, like, hey, this is an issue at the end of games, and someone goes, no, it's their depth. It's sort of like saying that when somebody goes, hey, the economy is a problem, or hey, the environment's a problem, and they go, no, how can we worry about the environment when the economy is like this? We can talk about both things at once, you know? Like, we can talk about how good Ben is, and we can talk about the depth issue, and at the same time, we can talk about, like, his position on the team, if he is to shoot, if he's not to shoot, and so on and so forth. I guess where I stand on it is, like, there are two outcomes, really. Obviously, the preferred outcome is him shooting. The comparisons, I think, to Jason Kidd are way off base in that, in Jason Kidd's second year, he was shooting 4 threes a game and hitting 33% of them. It's not similar to that. In the same way that we've never seen anybody in his size do what he does in a positive way, I'm not sure that we've ever seen anyone outside of Rondo, maybe, who has been so, or Sean Livingston or something, but Sean Livingston shoots mid-range jumpers a lot, like, who has been so adverse to shooting any jump shots at all. So I see it as two roads. Road one is he starts shooting, and he is an efficient standstill jump shooter. Maybe he becomes better than that, but just efficient enough where he can shoot one or two threes a game if he's wide open, and the same on 16 footers and stuff like that. The other option is if he doesn't do that, I think it's imperative that they play two guards, and I think this might be imperative anyway, in that the best lineup to take advantage of what everyone can do is to have, and I mentioned Brogdon, and I don't know if it's Drew Holiday or whoever it is, but if J.J. Redick is one of the guards, let's say, for example, having a big-ish point guard who can play off-ball along with Butler and Simmons and Embiid without thinking about who plays what position is will make it a lot easier for them to play than the way that they're playing now. And I think Ben becoming more of a screener on offense and them having more options on offense to close games than just obviously Ben's effectiveness in the half court against good defensive teams in crunch time is going to be hard for him because they just back off him and he won't shoot. And it's like this has been illustrated. So I just think they need more people on the court with him who are capable of creating and shooting to minimize that if he stays that way. And that's sort of my take on it.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, the maybe not him specifically, or maybe it's going to take a couple years for him to get there, but Shake Milton is a guy that you like for that role. Defensive-minded guard who can cover multiple positions and shoot off the catch and create a little bit. That is, if he improves and gets better, that's a role I'd like to see him in, as that growing into a Malcolm Brogdon type. The Simmons stuff, I think that it's becoming a mainstream position that the Sixers' big three doesn't work, and they should trade one of them and build around, build specifically to one of their skill sets. And Simmons, no one's suggesting they trade Embiid, so people are saying that Simmons is the odd man out. They should trade him. That's becoming a main there's the Yahoo article, there's Nespi Nation, there's the Deadspin. Jonathan Sharks brought it up on the Ringer NBA show. It's it's becoming, that's not a fringe Dietrich-y, it's not an even split. And I think it's just because people are very impatient and takes just beget more of the same takes, and conventional wisdom solidifies and people want to just say the same thing that they heard. It's why every single fucking national broadcast you hear, someone's going to bring up Ilyasova and Bellinelli. Because they heard it on a different national broadcast and they don't get to watch Sixers much, so they're just repeating it. And so I think there's some of that. Obviously, if this was it, and we said there's no way that Embiid, Butler, and Simmons are ever going to play better together, this is the best that it can be, then I could see maybe there's a cap on this. But they're still figuring it out. They haven't had an offseason. It's been a month and a half. Give it time. They're, especially if they're about to pay these guys, there's going to be 4+ years to figure out the best way for them to gel and mesh and stuff. It took LeBron, Wade, and Bosh time to figure it out. And those guys were some of the best players in the league. Our guys are not quite there yet. And I think also the Sixers don't play the same style as everybody else. I would like to see them run more pick and roll, but they don't do it much at all. And so because there's a lot of back to the basket stuff, there's exploiting mismatches, there's JJ dribble handoffs, there's trying to take advantage of transition buckets, that kind of thing. They play a very, very specific, different way. I think everyone analyzing basketball is the way that people win basketball games now is the surround them with shooters thing. And running pick and roll and spread offense and do what the Rockets do. And everyone's analysis is just, this is the box that I'm fitting every team in, so I'm going to instruct them to do the same thing. And not that it's bad to run that sometimes, but Ben Simmons is really fucking good. And he's in his second year and he has gotten better year to year. He shot 54.5% from the field last year. He's shooting 57.8% from the field. That's obviously like he's taking shots inside for the most part, but that's still very impressive for a guy that handles the ball as much as he does. And he's the most switchable guy on the team defensively. He needs to shoot. I've always said that. Me doing a show with him doesn't mean I don't think he needs to shoot. He needs to shoot. And I think he's working on it. You see him in warm-ups taking threes, and hopefully that lends itself to in-game action at some point soon. Where he doesn't need to become like a guy who dribbles behind screens and stuff, but like just hit, catch, and shoot threes. But like he's very good now. So you don't trade a guy who's very good now who's like, hey, this one thing he would like to, we'd like him to add to his game. If he's not doing it right away, the solution isn't like, well, fucking trade him. Get out of there. It's just insane that people are so fucking impatient that they're willing to, like, whether it's mainstream or locally, to say like, oh, this thing is so bad that we're willing to trade like the second best guy we've drafted in the last like 25 years. And it's, I think it's just, it becomes like a snake eating itself situation where they just keep doing it. But I'd much rather him just slowly add the 3-point shot to his game and not trade him, because having really great, dynamic, interesting, unique players is a way for like teams to win. No one's going to win a fucking, championship with 5 Trevor Arizas. Like, have guys that can do different stuff, have guys that are tough to scheme against, and figure it out. Ben, obviously, in the half court of crunch time games, like, against good teams usually, like, he's got to work on stuff. Absolutely. He's got to get better in the half court, and Brett needs to figure out better ways to use him and to be successful. So it's not just standing in the corner. It's not just standing in the dunker spot, whether it's him or TJ. Like, it's a whole team thing. But to say, like, well, it's over. Trade him for, you know, Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday's a nice player, but, like, Ben Simmons is capable of being that, like, I don't, we've never seen anything like it. He's really fucking good. And I think just because him and Embiid and then now Jimmy don't, like, perfectly mesh right away, I think they're doing a pretty good job. But just, it's not exactly perfect. Doesn't mean you just fucking trade him. And so, you know, my national media criticism is just like, you know, they don't watch the team that much and everyone wants to have the same take pretty much. But locally, it's just tough to give. It's tough to ask Philly people to be patient. But the team's 23-13. They're working through stuff. They acquired a top 20 player during the season. So it's going to take time to integrate. And they're 23-13 and like, they have 3 good players. Maybe it's just like Sixers Twitter eating itself sometimes. Maybe it's just impatient. Maybe it's just Philly. Obviously, the struggles against Boston kill me team-wise. I hate losing to that fucking team. But, man, we just got to take a step back and, like, cool it for a sec.
Well, I do think the complication in this is because a lot of don't worry about it reaction is they're young, like let them figure it out, blah, 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 blah. And that is true, but they did put themselves in a situation when they traded for Butler in that like the same, like there should be patience for sure. But like that Heat team went to the finals the first year and won the finals the second year. So I think that what ends up happening is that because Embiid and Butler are further along on their development timelines than Simmons, and they appear to, in an imaginary world, work fine together, that that the expendable one becomes Simmons. And I do think the Sixers put themselves in a situation with the Butler thing, where their window is a little bit sooner and smaller than they thought. So I understand where the panic comes from. I do think Sixers Twitter eating itself is, think about this, like we do 2 hours of podcasting a week and it seems like so much. Anytime I look at Twitter, everybody's talking about the Sixers like 24 hours a day. There's nothing to say anymore. Like, you need, there should be like an hour a day where people talk about the Sixers and then they go about their lives, because you sort of like run out of stuff and then you look for stuff to be mad at. You just sort of like search it out and make yourself impatient. It's like being in a relationship and like watching, like imagine dating a girl and seeing where she's going every second. It would drive you insane. I think everybody's driving themselves insane, but I do think the Butler thing forces them to figure this out a little bit quicker than,
sure,
than they would have previously.
But they've been good with Jimmy. They just haven't won a game against Boston with him yet.
Yeah.
And I as much as I think I tweeted this, but like as much as Embiid's turnovers and like carelessness and Simmons struggling with crunch time half court offense, and then I'm also having a tough time integrating Jimmy, as much as those are like issues, you know, the biggest issue is they don't have enough playable guys. They don't have enough. They don't have enough two-way guys that can hang on both sides of the court. And it's frustrating. We've said that like 45 times, so it gets tiresome to say it, and I'm sure people are tired of hearing it, but like that's the biggest problem, is that Boston has more guys that can hang on both sides of the court and exploit someone on the Sixers, because the Sixers only have three guys who maybe you add Wilson Chandler, maybe, but I don't know that I can add him, of guys who can't on one end or the other, is an easy guy to either sag off or switch into pick and roll and have them be exploited. It's really easy to do that, and the good teams can do that. Brett's been saying, oh, we spent our whole offseason like trying to compete with Boston and hang with Boston, and I was like, who did you do that for? Like, what? There were no. As much as, like, sure, you don't believe in Luau or Justin Anderson, but, like, you didn't replace those guys with, like, really playable guys. Wilson Chandler, I guess, but, like, he's not athletically, like, hanging with anybody. He's just, like, physical and has the body shape of that stuff. So if the idea was, yeah, we're trying to compete with Boston, get more guys on the wing who can compete with Boston's guys on the wing. And they didn't, and so they struggle.
The issue being that Boston has put those guys together, and Toronto has put those guys together over several years of drafting and trades and all that stuff, and now we have to do it like sort of on the fly. So I hope, I hope they're able to do that. That would be my thought. So. Hey, AU is here. I was trying to think of what my bold prediction was before, like earlier today, and I couldn't remember. The only one I remembered was my Kobe one. But Reevaluated in 3 weeks is brought to you by Kinetic Skateboarding, who also sponsored the Reviews Pod. Kinetic Skateboarding, your home for your locally owned and process trusting home for skateboards, obviously, but gear, hoodies, t-shirts, and sneakers you can't get anywhere else, Vans, Converse, Nikes, kineticskateboarding.com, 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. AU, we're all waiting to see how long your appearance lasts before your internet gets too frustrating and we say goodbye. What would you set the over-under on?
Oh, maybe a little bit higher than normal, because this week I'm staying at my girlfriend's place.
Oh, wow. The adjustment.
She like works in IT, so her internet's a little bit more trustworthy than mine is, I think.
That's great.
Can you turn your mic up? Can you turn your mic up
yeah.
a little bit?
In any event, are we ready to kind of revisit some of those bold predictions from preseason?
Let's do it.
Yeah, it's weird. Your levels aren't going up and down as you talk, but I'm just going to cross my fingers that it's working. So,
all right.
we can hear you. I think it's working, so let's cross our fingers. All right, so bold predictions.
What's the worst that could happen? Yeah, so yeah. Who do we want to do first?
Mike.
All right, let's do Mike's first. All right, so the first one is probably the most interesting one in retrospect, which was that Zaire Smith plays more crunch time minutes in the playoffs this year than Dario Saric.
Oh, which, still capable. Yes.
which certainly would seem on pace, although obviously it has to be at least 1 minute for Zaire Smith that to happen, and we have to see. I guess we finally saw some proof of life of him, so that's a good start.
Huge.
But Yeah, but certainly seeing him on the court would be another big start. Now, what I don't remember and what I forgot to check before coming on is whether Mike said in the playoffs in general or in the playoffs specifically for the Sixers, still possible that Dario gets in with the Timberwolves, although I think when I last checked, they're third from the bottom of the standings in the West, so maybe not too likely. But I gave him an 8 out of 10 for that prediction, so if that comes true, that's a pretty big get for him.
Great.
The next one was Sam Hinkie ringing the bell before a Sixers game. I think if that's going to happen, it's probably not until the playoffs anyway. So I don't want to make a judgment on that one yet.
Right, and that would have to be like Embiid would have to ask him.
Yeah. So
yeah, because he's not doing it. That's the other thing is that he won't do it. But it would be amazing. It would be a 10 level. Did you give that a 9 or a 10?
I gave that
level?
An 8, which okay. I don't know. I think it's because it was initially you predicting that one of us or one of the two of you gets to do it, and then Mike stole it by making it Hinkie, and so I bumped it from a 7 to an 8 for that. But
okay, fair.
The next one was the Sixers making a Lee Jenkins style hire from Sixers Twitter. That was a 6. Hasn't happened yet. Still
no,
feels possible.
Not yet. No, might be you.
Yeah, who knows? next one was Joel Embiid shooting over 82% for the free throw line. Currently at 80.1%, which is a career high, I believe, and he's hit. It's climbing because he's hit 27 of his last 30 over his last 5 games. That's 90%. So
there we go.
Stay tuned on that one. Ben Simmons' show with Mike getting picked up. Actually, Mike predicted that it wouldn't happen. I gave him a 5 for that. Any updates on that one, Mike?
We should know more in the next like 3 or 4 weeks.
All right then. One that seems a little bit more decisive at the moment, the Bucks finishing the top 3 in the East, which I gave a 7, I think, much to Spike's consternation. It certainly seems like I might have been too generous with that. They're currently tops in the East at 24-10, although it's still only 2 games ahead of the Sixers, who are in 4th, so not a lock yet, but certainly on pace.
I can't believe you gave that a 7.
I remember you complaining on Twitter that the scoring was rigged after the fact, and I was looking over my scores.
It was rigged!
Yeah, it might have been rigged. I'm not sure how that happened. I don't remember rigging it, but it's certainly the evidence suggests that it was probably rigged. In any event, next, and the last of Mike's predictions was that Dwight Howard gets cut from the Wizards and does not get re-signed by another team. Remarkably, he's still on the Wizards, although it feels like he was cut several months ago. The season is definitely not gone as hoped either for Dwight or the Wizards. So who knows? Still, I think it might be the point where actually he is too injured and the Wizards are too bad that there's no point really in even cutting him. And it's like, oh, we may as well just keep this fucking guy on the roster all season. So I don't know if that one's on pace to come true or not, but that's definitely one to monitor for the rest of the year. Yeah. I think I gave that an 8. I didn't make a note about that, but I think that was an 8.
I think it's possible that happens, and I definitely think it's possible that he
signed a 2-year.
That he doesn't.
He signed
a
2-year deal, though, right? He signed a 2-year deal.
I don't know.
I think. Yeah, I don't remember that part. I would have said it was just the one. And I do think Mike's right that if he gets cut, he won't get re-signed by anyone else. But I also just think there's almost just no point in cutting him at this point. So we'll see about that. Meanwhile, Spike's predictions. First one's looking very good, and that's J.J. Redick starting 30 more games than Markel Fultz over the course of the season. I gave that a 4. Currently, it's actually closer than you might think still. It's only 23-15 in J.J.'s favor at the moment. So he still needs to start at least 22 more games. Fultz needs to not start any. Both seem very plausible, but you never know. Injuries, we'll see what happens. The next one was that the Sixers will acquire at least 2 former Sixers, which somehow I only gave a 6. That seems like a pretty bold prediction in retrospect. We looked like we might have gotten 1 with Kyle Korver, but the Jazz, I guess, were looking to fill their own like ex-Utah quotient, so we're still at 0 there. Are there any like even being discussed right now? Are there any that like seem on the horizon? I'm trying to think.
No.
Not that I can think of.
I don't think so.
Justin Holiday would be one.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, for sure. Maybe if the Grizzlies fall apart, Shelvin Mack could be.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah,
that'd be good.
Bring it.
Next one was Wilson Chandler playing fewer than 30 games this year. Remarkably, he's already played 23, so only needs to hit 7 more for that. Although I do have to consider that he's a perpetual risk, you know, tweaking a hamstring or something. He might just randomly out for the rest of the season.
Does he move enough to tweak a hamstring?
That's a fair question.
Has he Has he started more games than any dead person in the history of the NBA?
I was going to say, there's an asterisk on this anyway, because he's been dead since 2015. So maybe it's those 23 games are like an illusion or apparition or something. I don't know. And we had you saying that Mike's Ben Simmons show will get picked up to series. So that was also a five. And that's also TBD, I guess. Robert Covington finishing in the top six in three-pointers made. I don't know if you specified a team or not. I'm going to say that accounts for the entire season regardless. He's currently at 80 made in over 33 games played. Would you like to guess what place that ranks him in the NBA currently?
It's probably like 16th.
Close. It's tied for 19th with Eric Gordon and Danny Green. James Harden's leading. He has 139.
I think he's still shooting like 38-something percent from three and halfway through the year, which is... Go Rob.
Yeah,
go
Rob. Making about 2.5 a game. He's putting up his numbers. It's a good run for Covington. The next one, Draymond Green demanding a trade from Golden State. Certainly, seemed like the first couple chapters of that story were being written with the KD stuff about a month or two ago. Sort of stalled recently, but the team's still struggling. His numbers are terrible. I could definitely see that happening. That one I only gave a 7. Probably should have given a little bit higher, but that seems like that's a possibility for sure. And your last and most famous one was Kobe Bryant playing at least one game for the Lakers, getting that a 9. I don't know if we're any closer to that happening. I meant to do like a Google to see if like somebody had asked him about it and he had gone like, oh, we'll see. But I don't
How
I don't
is
know
that not a 10? This is so rigged. This whole
one,
thing
one game,
rigged.
Whatever. The stranger things have happened than that. I don't think I gave out any 10s, and I don't think anything we said was quite deserving of 10. Real quick, though, before...
What would have been deserving a 10? Kobe playing a game? Hinky ringing the bell? These would be crazy things. Unless we predict like the next like false shoulder thing or burner account.
Yeah, that would have been a 10. If you had predicted people. Colangelo Gate, that would have been a 10. Michael Jordan coming back and playing a game for the Hornets, that might have been a 10. But yeah, Kobe, it's too plausible. I mean, it would be fucking insane, but it would not be implausible. So real quick, my own bold predictions submitted on the website. Markelle Fultz losing a starting job and then getting it back, obviously halfway there. Other one seems a little bit less likely to get the other half. This becoming the year that Ben Simmons versus Brandon Ingram becomes more of a debate. Nope. I was right about the Simmons part of that because I predicted that the media and fans would kind of turn on him because, oh, he's not a good fit and he still puts up numbers, but are they ever going to help the Sixers win? The Ingram part, he has not lived up to his end, certainly.
He's so bad, and people are going to keep talking about him as if he's like has all his potential, but like, what's he good at?
Yeah, it's What's becoming very at? Wiggins-y.
The idea you just got to get the ball in his hands. And it's like, well, if everybody has the fucking ball in their hands, they could do more with it. If you give Demetrius Jackson the ball all game long, he's going to put up stats. Like, that doesn't make him like an NBA player. It just means like he's not efficient.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see if that gets better or worse with LeBron out for a little bit. I certainly don't think the indicators are in his favor. We'll see. Next was Dario Saric being the odd man out for the Sixers this year, which was true until he got traded. So I'm going to take like a half win for that one. Sixers having a big injury to a non-Embiid guy in their lineup and then going on a 10-game winning streak obviously hasn't happened yet, but they really haven't had like a major injury to any important player. Fair, but I also think that that's going to be wrong anyway because the team is disgustingly thin, and we saw what's happened like when Jimmy Butler misses two games and then it seems catastrophic, so I'm not feeling too great about that one. Joel Embiid finishing top three in MVP voting, I would say he's probably currently fourth, maybe behind Giannis, Harden, and LeBron. Does that sound about right?
I mean,
yeah, Harden is on his way now, but I think it's gonna be hard for Harden to get votes unless they continue to win.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, but, I mean, in the Kawhi West, has you know, more of a chance, I'd say, than Harden right now.
Kawhi's missed a whole bunch of games, and I don't know. It seems to me that maybe there was some Kawhi/Lowry discussion. Obviously, not super impactful on the overall race, but I can't see Kawhi really being a factor there unless the Raptors end up winning 65 games or something. So, and with LeBron, you know, he's got an injury now. We'll see how long that keeps him out. I think Embiid's at least in the mix. He's in the discussion. Less accurate, the Toronto Raptors end up being a bummer. I think I said that they would just kind of struggle all season and maybe get it together in the playoffs. That certainly didn't happen. And then my personal favorite, Jimmy Butler stays on the Minnesota Timberwolves all season, wins a playoff series, and then re-signs there next summer. Very possibly the worst prediction I've ever made. But, you know, you swing hard, and sometimes the bat just kind of slips out of your hands. So no regrets there. But, not looking too good on that one.
I have a separate question, not related to anything really, but how many free throw attempts do you think Wilson Chandler has on the year so far?
You know, it's funny. Like, I think he shot two in the game against the Jazz a couple nights ago. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't remember what it looks like when Wilson Chandler shoots a free throw. I think I've never seen Wilson Chandler shoot a free throw. So I'll say 9.
I'm going to say 18.
11.
Wow.
That's phenomenal.
He is 7 of 11 from the line. TJ is 10 of 10.
23 games and 9 free throw attempts for a 3-and-D wing. That is just spectacular. Go you, Wilson Chandler.
He's not. It was like the idea was like he could do a little. He can't do anything. He's so bad. He's so toast.
All right. So moving on. Who wants to go first with their New Year's resolutions for the year?
Spike, go it.
Okay, I got two. One is me related, and one is Sixers related. One is. I'm going to participate in Sixers Twitter for less than an hour each day.
What would you say you're currently at?
Well, I'm because of my job, like I'm there like all day. Like I have to be at least actively looking at it almost all day. But I'm going to figure out a way not to. I can't watch the incessant like fighting with each other over nothing and whining. It drives me like crazy. No one has ever convinced anyone of anything on Twitter. Just remember that. No one. No one has ever won an argument. Only losers. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is the resolution for the Sixers. I want them to empower Elton Brand in that if he's going to be the GM, I want him to be the GM. And my sense is that like Brett has veto power over everything. And I'd just like for Elton to be the GM. I'd like for any GM to be the GM. And because Elton is our GM, I'd like him to be our GM. To be able to look at moves in the current and in the future and be able to actually plan, I think you need the coach not to be looking over that. So that would be my resolution for the Sixers.
I like that one. And since mine's kind of related, I guess I'll go next. So my resolution is a sort of a personal one, and it's basically for me not to get angry with the trade return if and when the Sixers do try to trade Markelle Fultz. I obviously have like a lot of history, a lot of pretty raw history with the team's dealings in recent years when trading their kind of fallen prospects. I mean, I remember begging them not to trade Nerlens Noel before the deadline in 2017, and of course they did. And you guys heard my rant about the Stauskas and Okafor trade. And I want to sort of set an early precedent of putting more trust in this front office, because I feel like they've basically earned it so far with the Zaire Smith and the Jimmy Butler trades. I mean, you can argue those trades in basketball terms if you want to, but what I don't think you can argue is that they were made as basketball decisions. And, they weren't easy decisions. They really shook up the team and they were easily criticized deals, even though there was obviously a lot of upside involved with both. But they certainly weren't done for PR reasons. And my main objection with the Colangelo administration wasn't just the bad trades that they made, is that the reasons behind them were always image related, or at least it seemed that way, the way they presented them. And I still don't really want them to trade Fultz, because in my gut, I still feel like there's some value there. And I do want to get one more look at him. But I can also rationally recognize that the odds are pretty stacked against him ever being a useful member of this team again. And that also that, even though it seems like his value is really low now, and obviously, Spike, you've talked about this a lot, but it can still get much lower, and it can become the point where he's like a negative asset that we have to try to get off of. And I certainly don't want to see that happen. And I want to, even though I want to hope that there's a magical way he can get back to the lineup and help, because I do feel like we could use a lot of the things that he does, even in a non-best case scenario, just his defense, his playmaking. I do think there's a way that he helps this team, but if Elton and the rest of the front office do decide that there's like a deal available that they like, even if it's only for a role player or a rotation guy like a KCP type, someone that's not really exciting and it feels wrong to be trading the former number one overall pick for, I want to be able to trust that they sort of know. I mean, they have better information than we do about Fultz and what's going on with him, certainly than I do specifically. And I want to trust that they're doing what's best for the Sixers and not just for the press release that they send out afterwards. So I think that'd be a healthy way to start the new year.
That's a good one. That's a good resolution. Mike?
So I would say I have a pretty good, healthy, daily, like, Sixers Twitter action. I, as you know, don't follow many people, so that helps. And I don't chime in all the time, so I think that helps also. And I don't look. I don't look when I'm. If the Sixers game is on and I can't watch it, I will not look at Twitter until I watch the game, so I don't spoil it for myself. So I would say I'm good in that department. For my own resolution, I would say just drink more water is a good one. I'm not going to try to go by it. It's healthy. It's nice. I don't know, my pee shouldn't be as yellow. So let's drink some water there. And then for the Sixers, play Bolden and Shake more. Play them. See what you have, because the bench currently isn't working.
Remember the Shake thing. The Shake thing. They have a limit,
right? But if they're not filling that roster spot, which who knows if they're going to, they could convert Shake to a regular deal and then sign someone else to a two-way and have 45 days of them if they want to do that. Play them. Play them more. TJ's not the answer all the time. He's the answer to some things, but 25 minutes a game of TJ is too much. Muscala, similarly, not always the answer. I think Landry is great, and they should keep playing Landry as much as they're playing him. But see what you have in Bolden and Shake. Let them work through the issues that they clearly have, because they might be valuable pieces come playoff time. And, Brett never last season developed enough trust in Justin Anderson and wouldn't play him. And that hurt the team because they needed him in the playoffs. And let's not make that same mistake with these guys. Play him.
Yeah, water is pretty clutch. Like, sometimes you go a long time without having it and then you just have like a nice tall glass of it. And you're like, oh yeah, this is what it's about.
Yeah. I don't like refrigerated water. I like room temperature water.
I have this argument with my roommate all the time. He insists that he doesn't like cold water because he can't drink it fast enough. I think that's ridiculous. Cold water is where it's at.
I think it's just bad. I think it's just a nice. It's an easy slide with not room temperature, not like warm, but like minimally cold.
Yeah,
like a little. Yeah, like a little cold, not like, very cold.
Like restaurant without the ice water.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe the ice. One more thing, since you did mention him, and I had to kind of go in on this. Obviously, a couple podcasts ago, complained a lot about Mike Muscala, among other things, that he was shooting 38% for the field. I begged him to just kind of get that above 40%. 8 games since then, he has shot 35% for the field, 31% from deep, combined 3 of 20 against the Pacers, Raps, and Celtics. But he was great in garbage time against the Spurs, so thanks for that, Moose. Good job.
Wow. Racist Andrew Underberger. Yeah. Shuts it down, closes the year with another racist rant about Mike Muscala. Really disappointing. Yeah. Thanks, AU. Happy New Year, buddy.
Yeah, to you too, man. See you in 2019.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Before we get to the mailbag and wrap it up, let's talk about our sponsor, Big Barker Dog Beds. Big Barker Dog Beds. Not just any dog bed, the only dog bed. Much like we are the only Sixers podcast, Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds are the only dog beds. Like, it's important that your dog sleep on a proper mattress for his health, his or her health, and for your peace of mind. And those beds that you're getting at the pet store are not proper mattresses. They're shitty. They're glorified blankets. I've said many times, go ahead, try laying on it. Tell me if you feel supported. As your dog gets older, like we all do, you know, having that good night's sleep and having your joints supported in the proper way becomes more important. There is no better way to do that than with a Big Barker dog bed, which has been engineered by experts to keep dogs youthful for longer and bring older dogs back to their best. Has a 10-year warranty. So you buy this dog, and people have said, oh, the Big Barker's expensive. Well, this is the only dog bed you're going to have to buy for at least the next decade. 10-year warranty. The foam won't flatten, or they'll replace it for free. Go to bigbarker.com/Ricky. Bigbarker.com/Ricky. When you purchase a Big Barker dog bed at that link, you will, A, get your dog in the process pup section of RightsRickySanchez.com, and B, Big Barker will donate $50 to the Providence Animal Center. Here's another complaint I've heard. My dog won't sleep on dog beds. Well, in my opinion, that makes you an irresponsible dog owner for not giving it enough of a try. But here's what I'll say. Big Barker has a one-year one-year at-home trial. So you order the dog bed. The dog won't sleep on the bed at all. You can just return it for free. They will even pay for shipping. BigBarker.com/Ricky. You're supporting a local company with beds handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds.
A very barky new year.
Let's go to the Lorenzo Brown mailbag and an email that may have been the best email that I have read this year from a Ricky listener. It's a little long, Mike, but I think it's important that I read the whole thing. This comes from Scott. All this recent t-shirt talk inspired me to share with you my story about how your shirt played a big part. I've worn the Sam Hinkie Lottery Wheel Trust the Process shirt at almost every major event that has taken place over my life in the last 2+ years. I'd like to make an editorial addition here that t-shirt by the rights to Ricky Sanchez was made and sold in 2015 with Trust the Process on it. So if you are trademarking things, I would like you to know that that was made and sold in 2015. Back to the email. November 17th, 2016 was the last day I used drugs and alcohol. It was the most difficult battle of my life, going through unimaginable pain and withdrawal, and every day during my detox, I wore this shirt. I didn't see an end in sight, but decided that I needed to quite literally trust the process. So that's what I did. I wore the shirt and I said to myself, just trust the process and it will be okay. Over 2 years later, I am still clean today. When I spoke for my 1 and 2 year anniversaries, I wore the shirt. When I have something major at work or with family, I always make sure I wear the shirt underneath. Even tonight, where I am going to speak at the Bucks County Prison about getting clean and finding a new way to live, you bet I'll be wearing my shirt. So I just wanted to share with you and say thank you. Maybe I would have gotten better anyway, but I'd like to think the shirt and this and the Sixers and the podcast and the mentality we believed in played some part in my recovery, and I thank you for that. If you'd like to share this on the pod, you have my blessing. Addiction can be beaten and lives can change. You just need to ask for help and trust the process that things will get better. Either way, I just wanted to share with you guys. Unbelievable.
That's great.
We've heard amazing stories, I think, over the last 5 years about, in general, like what the community has done or what believing in this in terms of just as a person has done. But this is an awesome story. It's a shame we don't make this shirt anymore. I would send him a new one. I saw the picture. It does look beaten up. We have increased in t-shirt quality since then. But in fairness, he has worn it a lot. So anyone who's having trouble getting through a problem like that, if you email us, I will, obviously there are places that you can go, but if you'd like somebody to talk to, I'm sure Scott wouldn't mind having his information passed along, and I'm happy to do that as well. So thank you for sharing, Scott. Have an actual basketball email. This is from Zach. Hey guys, I know he's 63 years old, but what do you think about adding Vince Carter to the team? Hawks dwindling at the bottom of the league, could probably get him by offering one of our second round picks. He's having a solid year, would be fun to just have him in a Sixers jersey. If that doesn't work, maybe we dig up Paul Pierce. Just kidding. Fuck Boston. Keep up the good work. What do you think about Vince Carter?
Yeah, I want to like Vince Carter. I mean, I do. I've always liked Vince Carter, but I want to like him for this team. I don't know that he can hang. I think it might be kind of novelty-ish at this point in his career.
Yeah, I guess when you think about what we're going to be able to get, you know, based on what we're willing to trade, aside from the Fultz thing, if we can get anything for him or if they decide not to trade him. I think what I'd be looking at, although I'd love to have somebody down the stretch in the playoffs, is a guy to help us get through the last 20 games of the year without playing all of our starters 40 minutes a game, when playoff positioning is going to be important. And I think Vince Carter could definitely give us 15 minutes a game and play, you know, and hit shots and whatever. So I wouldn't be against it.
I think they could, if they're going to go get somebody who can still... I don't think he can cover guards at this point in his career. And that's kind of what the Sixers need the most, is a guy who can hit some shots and also cover, you know, ones and twos. And Vince can't do that anymore.
Do you have a realistic person in your mind that we can get for, like, almost nothing and that fits that?
I keep saying Justin Holiday. I really think Justin Holiday would be great. I really think that he's exactly the kind of thing that this team needs. He's starting for Chicago, so maybe they... we'll ask for more, but I wouldn't mind giving up, you know, we've so many second rounders in the future, one this year, one next year, like, sure.
I am going to continue with my sign Brogdon in the offseason campaign. And I can imagine this. Imagine we sign Brogdon, but we decide to boo him anyway.
We'd sign him and we'd have to like do some sort of ceremony to take the rookie of the year like from him. Or like include Embiid and maybe Dario also. I'd be fine with that. The face turn for Brogdon would be nice.
It would be amazing. He almost had his chance at Fly the Process 3 or Bust the Process 3, Fly the Process 1. I think signing with the Sixers would be his ultimate admittance that everyone was wrong and he had to come play for a winner. It would be amazing. And I think he fits perfectly with Simmons. Like, he would be a perfect point guard to play, I think. Big, can play a little defense, hits open threes. I don't know. He'd be in the twilight of his career as he's entering, as he is in his late 30s. He'd be a good guy to have. All right, that's all I got. Do we play tonight? No, we play tomorrow night, right? Portland?
Yeah.
Yeah. Would like to get another win. We'd like to pile up wins on the West Coast trip. Let's pile up those wins.
Yeah, they got Portland and then the Clippers and Suns. So if they can win one of Portland or Clippers, and then obviously the Suns, then I think you feel good about the trip.
Yep, for sure. All right. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You know, like this. We are the murderous pair. That went to jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then went to hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have power to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Woo. Step into the spotlight. Woo. Uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Cup in the clouds on a missile to turn.